Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we're going to tell you about one local legislator who grew up in poverty and is now going to bat for students to try and increase funding with the University of California in hopes of seeing tuition hikes rolled back. We have some sad news in the case of a missing Alzheimer's patient in Julian. And on our Green Scene report, learn why a proposed solar farm in Lakeside's scenic El Monte Valley is sparking strong opposition from residents and others. Hear about a new telescope at the Mount Laguna Observatory and what that means for local astronomers and astronomy students. Can a corporation suffer mental anguish and other human emotions? One major energy corporation is claiming just that in a lawsuit filed against a citizens' watchdog group. Hear how this could expand the impact of the Citizens United ruling to grant companies even broader rights formerly reserved only for individuals. On our Crime Beat report, we'll tell you about a robbery and an assault on a woman in a wheelchair in the college area. For years, San Diegans have paid among the highest utility rates in the nation, but now you'll be in the dark about how your rates compare to those in other cities. Find out why on today's show. There's a new tiger coming to a big cat rescue facility in Alpine, and we'll have details on the latest rescue effort. We'll be replaying our interview with Tony Mastardo, the maestro of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra, which has a concert coming up this week, and we'll have a sneak preview for you. We'll also have some holiday recycling tips and advice for shoppers on how to avoid overcharges, and how to report stores with scanners that charge you more than the advertised price rates. We'll have a weather report, a woman's health alert, and a replay of our interview on our bookshelf segment with Diana Lindsay from Sunbelt Publications, who is also an author herself. You'll hear all this and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. When the University of California's Board of Regents voted in November to raise tuitions by 5% a year over the next 5 years, San Diego Assemblywoman Toni Atkins cast her vote against the measure. Students have a strong advocate in Atkins, who is also the newly appointed Speaker of the Assembly in Sacramento. In testimony to the Regents, Atkins spoke about knowing firsthand the importance of higher education being affordable for all.
I'm a first-generation college student from the hills of Appalachia, who wouldn't be here today without a good education. So I understand, and I was one of those students. I fought for these things when I was in school, and I fought for tuition decreases and support for students, both public and private, because I had the ability to go to a private institution thanks to aid, support, and low-interest loans. So, you know, what I would say is we have work to do. It is incumbent upon us to figure out how to have this conversation and this negotiation and move beyond frustration. We have disinvested in education, but over the last several years, we've tried to reinvest. And I am happy to speak after Speaker Emeritus Perez, who put it in context as someone who helped us get $152 million for middle-class scholarships. What's being proposed today is going to hurt middle-class students.
The regents who voted for the tuition hike blamed the state for not adequately funding the university. Back in October, Governor Jerry Brown vetoed a measure that would have boosted funding for the UC system because projected state revenues from property taxes came up short. But Speaker Toni Atkins has made clear that she believes the tuition hike could have been avoided. She has also pledged to work with the governor to come up with a budget that would increase funding for the UC system and potentially allow rollback of the tuition hikes that were passed over her objections.
Now is the moment where we need to come together and figure this out. And I have a proposal. We were working on a proposal before November 5th when I learned that this was a proposal by the president. We were already working on this. I've already had conversations with our governor to say, give me an opportunity, let's sit down. And so I've made recommendations. I've passed it out. I think there's another approach. We are going to have to continue to work towards reinvesting at higher levels. We're still not going to be able to do it overnight. We haven't been able to do it overnight. We won't be able to do it overnight. But I think I offer some alternatives that I will present to my caucus as the speaker, not as a regent, but as the speaker of an assembly that has to work to approve a budget that hopefully gets us a little further so that you can meet your mission and we can feel good that we're trying to reinvest in Californians.
Speaker Atkins also voiced strong sentiments about the tuition hike and what that means. If not rolled back, it would amount to 25% over the next 5 years. And here were her final words to the regents.
Shame on us. Shame on us for being in this position today that got this busload of students from all over our state to have to come here, to have to come here and listen to us point fingers at each other. Shame on us. So we can continue to vent our frustrations, and we may need to do that. Every process of healing has to go through that period. But as I leave here today, come back tomorrow, and go back to Sacramento and back to my community in San Diego, I intend to work every day to put forward a proposal that we can agree on that gets us one step further as our state continues to recover. And as that recovery continues, we're going to be obligated to do better by this higher institution in this system. And I'm committed to that.
The body of Sally Esterbrook has been found by a maintenance man in heavy brush about a half a mile from where she went missing from the Pine Zanita campground in Julian back on October 4th. The disappearance of Esterbrook, who had Alzheimer's disease, triggered a massive search involving search and rescue teams from across Southern California. Lieutenant John Marion with the Sheriff's Homicide Division said it does not appear any foul play was involved. Cause of death will be determined by the medical examiner. Esterbrook was the mother-in-law of Dave Mustaine, lead singer in the band Megadeth. East County Magazine interviewed Mustaine on our radio show shortly after Esterbrook's disappearance, when he expressed hope that she would be found safely. Her husband, Bob Esterbrook, is calling on caregivers of people with Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia to use resources that are available to prevent such tragedy from occurring to anyone else. About 60% of patients with Alzheimer's will wander off at some point in time, but there are tracking devices with identification that can be worn, such as the Medic Alert and Safe Return Bracelet. You can find links to these devices through the Alzheimer's Association website at alz.org. In San Diego County, you can also register the information of a family member with Alzheimer's with the Sheriff's Take Me Home program. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. A proposed industrial solar farm in Lakeside's scenic El Monte Valley is stirring up controversy. Property owner David Pressman and OCI Solar Lakeside proposed to build a 40-acre solar photovoltaic project with 8,500 solar panels on El Monte Road. OCI is a Korean company with holdings in the U.S. A hearing is set on December 3rd at 6:30 p.m. on this issue before the Lakeside Community Planning Group at Lakeside's Community Center. The valley was designated by the county as a scenic view corridor. Residents were previously outraged when SDG&E failed to notify Lakeside's planning group or residents when it changed its route of Sunrise Power Link to run high-voltage lines through El Monte Valley. The utility company paid a large fine for that oversight, which deprived Lakeside residents of their right to submit comments protesting the project. Many never even learned about Sunrise Power Link until after it had been approved by state regulators at the California Public Utilities Commission. The OCI solar project, if built, would tie into Sunrise Power Link, rubbing salt in the wound for irate Lakeside residents who moved here to savor views of El Capitan Mountain, named for its resemblance to the spectacular peak in Yosemite and the valley at its base. Here are some of the comments posted on Facebook about the issue. Susan Flynn, the granddaughter of famed environmentalist John Muir, is adamant. El Monte Valley is beautiful and unique, she says. It is a historic part of Lakeside and should concern us all. Angela Magdaleno Islander voiced sadness at the news. Why does man have to ruin everything, she asks. It is so beautiful and peaceful looking. La Mesa resident and outdoor enthusiast Craig Maxwell called the valley one of the most beautiful places near East County, adding, "This cannot happen. Please tell us how we can help." Lakeside resident Tricia DeGenin notes that the project is not a done deal. She urges people who care about El Monte Valley to come fight for it. Various major plans have been proposed for the valley through the years, she points out, and some, like a proposed sand mining project, failed due to vocal opposition from residents. Let's not give up, she says, urging residents to speak your mind at the Lakeside Planning Group meeting on December 3rd. She says she's not against solar, but like many here, believes the industrial solar facilities do not belong in scenic places like El Monte Valley. Solar is touted as a solution needed to help California meet its mandate for renewable power and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But increasingly, residents in rural areas are asking that solar be put on rooftops and parking lots instead, closer to the urban areas where demand for power is highest, instead of spoiling some of the last and most pristine views left in San Diego's inland region. Billy Ortiz, a photographer who started this discussion on Facebook with photos of El Monte Valley, faults the landowner for looking to make money without working the land, as his father did before passing away. Ortiz says that agricultural students from El Capitan High School used to plant oats and hay on this plot of land to earn money for their school, so the project could also deprive Lakeside students of that revenue source. Linda Christopher Watson sums up her view of the problem here in a single word, greed. Some residents voice frustration with the regulatory system, which requires that only utility-scale projects be considered to meet our state's renewable energy mandate, not rooftop solar. Residents here are also disillusioned with some of their elected officials. Tori Ann Needham writes that El Monte Valley is as pretty as anywhere else on Earth and adds, government doesn't listen to the people anymore. But Eugenin fires back, freedom is not a guarantee, the longtime Lakeside resident concludes, it's fought for.
This is Leon Thompson with the Crime Beat Report. A masked man armed with a gun broke into a home on 67th Street in the College area Friday morning, terrorizing a wheelchair-bound woman with cerebral palsy. CBS News reports that the victim was talking with her caregiver in a home office when she heard her electronic door open. The suspect pointed a gun at her, then pushed the gun against her neck and demanded items, including her cell phone. The woman told CBS, "He took off my seatbelt and threw me on the floor." The suspect also forced the caregiver into a back bedroom, but fortunately the caregiver was able to escape and run to a neighbor's house. A 911 call was placed and police arrived in force, but the gunman had already fled. The suspect is described as 32 to 35 years old, 6 feet to 6 foot 3 inches tall, 250 to 270 pounds, with brown hair and a scruffy beard. He was wearing a white hooded sweatshirt and khaki pants, and he fled in a white vehicle. The frightened resident asks public help to find the suspect and bring him to justice so that she can feel safe in her home again. If you have any information on this crime, please call San Diego Police.
Can corporations suffer human emotions? An energy corporation is suing Public Citizen, a nonprofit citizens watchdog group, claiming that radio ads run by the group caused the company to suffer mental anguish and emotional distress. Murray Energy, a major coal mining corporation, is claiming that Citizens United, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that allowed unlimited election spending by billionaires and big business, may also give corporations privacy rights previously belonging only to people. Robert Wiseman, president of Public Citizen, calls the claim a bizarre twist in Murray Energy's lawsuit against the nonprofit. Public Citizen's radio ads drew attention to the company's efforts to block new rules that are intended to help protect workers, including prevent black lung disease and air pollution. In May, Murray Energy sued the U.S. Department of Labor seeking to block the new worker safety rules for protecting coal miners and clean air protections. When Public Citizen aired hard-hitting ads on the radio, revealing the plight of a miner stricken with black lung disease, Murray sued Public Citizen as well. After Public Citizen filed a motion seeking to dismiss this lawsuit, the company argued that the ads invaded its privacy and caused it mental anguish and emotional distress. A hearing in the case is scheduled for December 9th. Wiseman concludes, as if invoking Citizens United to claim a right intended for living, breathing human beings isn't radical enough, Murray Energy goes even further, suggesting that it is willing to make this lawsuit about the truth of climate science itself. It could be the Scopes Monkey Trial all over again, he says. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
There is a brand new $1.5 million telescope at the observatory atop Mount Laguna in East County. Astronomers from San Diego State University, which operates the observatory, will now be able to see farther into the universe than in the past. The new 50-inch telescope is named after the late Philip Claude, an amateur astronomer who donated more than half the cost of the new reflecting telescope, which uses curved mirrors to reflect light and form an image without a magnifying lens. That's about 50% more powerful than the older 40-inch telescope at the observatory. San Diego State is one of only a handful of universities worldwide with its own mountaintop astronomical observatory, where students in the astronomy department can learn stargazing skills. The new telescope will be housed in the observatory's original dome built in 1968. Alan Shafter, chair of the SDSU astronomy department, calls Mount Laguna's observatory the best astronomical site in the continental U.S., At 6,100 feet above sea level in elevation, it is also far from city lights. There's another cool thing about the new telescope. It can be operated remotely, so astronomy professors and their students won't have to travel to Mount Laguna to make observations, making it easier to amass large amounts of data that might otherwise be missed. Robert Quimby, the observatory's new director, helped discover several of the brightest supernova ever observed and continues researching why these are 100 times brighter than average, SDSU's News Center reports. Quimby says, to do quality research, you have to look deeper and farther than the other guys. You just have to be there at the right place and at the right time. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
For years, San Diego Gas and Electric has ranked highest in the nation, or nearly so, for the most expensive utility rates in America. The annual survey is conducted by Jacksonville Electric Authority. But now SDG&E has stopped providing its data to Jacksonville in 2013 after the company received bad publicity for its high rates. So San Diegans no longer know where our city ranks in utility rates. East County Magazine asked SDG&E why it stopped participating in the survey. Stephanie Donovan, Senior Communications Manager for SDG&E, sent this response. While we believe these types of surveys can provide valuable information, the methodology the JEA survey uses, for instance, ranking utility rates based on bills of 1,250 kilowatts per month, does not accurately reflect SDG&E customers' actual usage pattern, resulting in an apples-to-oranges comparison of the utilities. Donovan added, the reality is that fewer than 5% of SDG&E residential customers saw utility bills with energy use as high as 1,250 kilowatts in 2012. In that same year, SDG&E's average residential usage was about 500 kilowatts per month, far less than half the JEA survey's benchmark usage. SDG&E's customers' energy use is far lower than the JEA benchmark for a number of reasons, including their energy efficiency efforts and SDG&E's ongoing outreach to help them manage their usage and their bills to save energy and money. Donovan called the JEA survey counterproductive in our efforts to educate our customers and stakeholders about their energy consumption rates and bills. Currently, the survey lists Southern California Edison rates at $250 per 1,000 kilowatt hours, highest in the nation. An article in the San Diego Reader by Don Botter states that Richard Ryder, chairman of San Diego Tax Fighters, asked San Diego Gas and Electric to reveal its rates for certain inland customers, representing the bulk of the city of San Diego. The local utility charges a whopping $336 per 1,000 kilowatt hours, he states. That's 29% higher than the highest utility on the Jacksonville list, Southern California Edison writer notes. Botter says he asked San Diego Gas and Electric if it wanted to dispute Ryder's numbers, and he never heard back.
Phelos, a 485-pound tiger, will soon be coming to East County. Lions, Tigers, and Bears, a well-known rescue facility in Alpine, has been approved by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for a permit to import the tiger, who had been left suffering in abusive conditions at a Greek zoo after the financial collapse in Greece left the zoo strapped for funds. Phelos and his sister Athena were part of an Italian traveling circus and later were moved to a zoo in Trakala, Greece. Athena cut her foot on a Christmas ornament in 2012, but received no treatment and died of an infection after her wound was neglected for months. Fortunately, Phelos should have a better future thanks to the efforts of Bobby Brink, founder of Lions, Tigers, and Bears Rescue Facility in Alpine. Lions, Tigers, and Bears provide spacious enclosures complete with a pond, waterfall, room to run, and climbing equipment for its tigers and other exotic rescued animals. Brink says, "We are excited to welcome the newest member of our sanctuary family and provide him with the compassionate care he rightly deserves." You can follow the story of Phelos and other rescued animals at the nonprofit's website, lionstigersandbears.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, I am very delighted to welcome Anthony Mostardo, who is the maestro, the conductor of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Yes, glad to be here.
Now, you have quite an impressive bio. You have a Master of Music degree from DePaul University, a Certificate of Advanced Studies in Aesthetic Education from the University of Illinois. You've been a music coordinator at a school district in Chicago. You're a Spring Valley resident, and you have founded a number of musical organizations, including the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. That's quite a lot of accomplishments.
Yes, thank you.
Now, I understand that the chorus and orchestra have done a number of tours, including Europe. You've gone to the Czech Republic, Hungary, Austria, Iceland, Scandinavia, and Italy, performing in the major concert halls and the great cathedrals of Europe, as well as St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican.
That's correct. In 1978, our chorus traveled through Europe. And one of the highlights of that particular tour was a concert that was arranged for us. My cousin, who was the business manager for the Sistine Chapel Choir in the Vatican, arranged it. We were one of only seven choruses throughout the world at that time to have been performing in St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican. We were part of actually a mass that was conducted that particular Sunday morning. And it was attended by 26 cardinals and I think it was 13 bishops. It was broadcast on Italian radio and also televised. So we're very fortunate to have had that wonderful privilege.
What a marvelous experience that must have been.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit more about the chorus and the orchestra itself, how it got started, what the vision was for all of that.
Well, actually, I enjoy music, obviously. I first started a chorus back in Illinois, a suburb of Chicago, at William Rainey Harper. We started a chorus there. We had close to 150 members. We had 25 members waiting to join us. We were a non-audition chorus. We hired musicians from the Chicago Symphony. We got soloists from Northwestern University. Dr. Richard Alderson, a very good friend of mine, who was the head of the department at Northwestern, oftentimes allowed us to feature some of his very talented students. And after I retired from that organization, I came to San Diego, and that was back in 1998. I found myself for 2 years doing not much of anything, so I decided to start another chorus and orchestra. And so in 2001, we had our first concert, We performed a By the Way, Vivaldi's Gloria, the same piece that we are performing December the 7th, Sunday, at the College Avenue Baptist Church.
Very good. What time is the performance going to be?
The performance is at 3 o'clock, Sunday, December the 7th. That's actually Pearl Harbor Day, so it's one easy to remember.
Very good. What can you tell us about Vivaldi's Gloria? We're going to play a little excerpt here in a moment, but can you give our listeners a little education about the piece and the composer?
Yes. Well, of course, Antonio Vivaldi is a very prolific Italian composer. He is probably along with Johann Sebastian Bach, a part of the Baroque composers. He's a Venetian composer. He has written countless numbers of work. He's probably most famous for the Four Seasons, but he has written much more music, certainly, and a lot of instrumental music, vocal music. He has quite a fantastic background. He was called the composer with the flaming red hair. He was a member of a woman's retirement community and nursery that attended to younger children as well. Being a composer and living there, he had a natural surrounding for creating this wonderful music. And so we are very fortunate, again, to be able to perform his music this coming December 7th.
And now we're going to play a little excerpt for you listeners. Here's a treat today from Vivaldi's Gloria, performed by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. Wonderful music. What other pieces are going to be performed at the concert on December 7th?
We always feature a lighter piece of music for the second portion of our program. We've selected a piece that is just a wonderful piece of music. It's fantastically orchestrated and arranged, by the way, Robert Shaw, the conductor of the San Diego Symphony many years ago,
yes,
who moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and conducted the symphony there, actually composed this along with another composer, Robert Russell Bennett, the composer of the music score for Victory at Sea. So you can see that that music, if you are familiar with it at all, is just a wonderful piece of music. It's a full Hollywood Bowl symphonic sound.
Marvelous.
And it features all the wonderful carols that normally people listen to and sing during the holidays, but done in a wonderful, fantastic symphonic arrangement.
We're all looking forward to that. Now, I understand that the chorus is non-sectarian. So apart from the Christmas holiday music, what are some of the other types of things that the chorus performs along with the orchestra?
In addition to performing our major two concerts a year, we do a winter concert and we do a spring concert, usually the first week in December and then also the first week in May. We also do a lot of outreach performances. We perform in community centers. We perform in retirement communities. We perform for groups that are not able to come to our concert. In fact, with the assistance of the Rotary Club of San Diego, we are actually able to provide bus transportation for these folks that are shut-ins, and we bring them to our concert, and they enjoy it immensely.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like a terrific group. If people are interested in becoming involved, mm-hmm. how does one try out or become a member mm-hmm. of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra?
Right. Orchestra members, of course, are hired. Mm-hmm. We actually pay them a fee for performing for us, but chorus members are not. We simply do not have what we call auditions to join our chorus. I do have a telephone interview with them. I ask that I have a chance to speak to them and find out a little bit about their background, their musical experiences, and of course, if they do read music, certainly this is an asset for us because they come somewhat prepared to learn the many challenging works that we perform. In fact, over the 14 years that we've been in existence, we have actually performed over 57 major choral works. Most often at the holidays, at Christmas time, most organizations perform the Messiah. Well, we perform the Messiah several times, but in addition to that, we expose our chorus and orchestra members to new music, music that normally is not performed, and this expands their knowledge of music and so on. So they don't need to be auditioned. They hopefully would have some background in music, some choral music, singing in a temple or a church. That would be preferable.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a large group. I understand you have 90 members now, and as well as 48 orchestra members.
That's correct. We started back in 2001 with about 36 members, and over the years we have progressed consistently, and now our current membership is about 90 members. We are an SATB, that's a soprano, alto, tenor, and bass, mm-hmm. Full vocal chorus. As I said, our musicians are paid. They're actually non-professionals. There are people who are business people who are professionals, but come and like to perform with us.
And are they from all over the county or primarily East County?
Actually, we have membership that comes from all over the county. We've had people from as far away as Temecula and El Centro coming to join us.
And where are the rehearsals held?
We rehearse at the Hillsdale Middle School in Rancho San Diego, which is a subdivision of El Cajon.
So right here in East County.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Again, listeners, if you tuned in late, we have been interviewing Maestro Anthony Mastardo, who is the conductor of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra, which started right here in East County and has quite a long list of accomplishments. They are going to be presenting a joyful holiday music celebration on December 7th at 3 o'clock at the College Avenue Baptist Church near San Diego State. And if people want to get tickets or they want to get more information, Maestro, where can they go to get that information?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that question. That's an important question. Mm-hmm. Actually, we have a website. It's www.sandiegofestivalchorus.org. If you will log on to our website, you can get all of the information about our coming concert, information about joining our chorus, and anything else concerning ticket prices and so on. We would love to have you come. It's going to be a fantastic concert. Our attendance usually is in the range of about 1,200 people.
Wow.
So we do have a very good following, and we hope that you will be part of that for this coming concert.
Well, very good, and I might add that you can also listen to some more of this wonderful music when you go to that website at sandiegofestivalchorus.org. Thank you so much for joining us today, Maestro, and I'm certainly looking forward to trying to make it out to the concert on December 7th.
And thank you so very much for inviting me.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, Get trained to be a citizen journalist and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine with some tips on recycling holiday waste. The holiday season is full of celebrations, comfort food, and gifts. But along with the holiday spirit comes increased waste. Household waste increases by more than 25% between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day. Knowing how to reduce waste can save money and conserve natural resources and landfill space. This holiday season, challenge yourself and your family to make simple changes to reduce your waste. Here are some suggestions from I Love a Clean San Diego. Recycle more. The list of what goes in your recycling is always expanding. Recent additions include rigid plastics, including clamshell food, packages, plastic toys, and food tubs. Aseptic cartons, including milk, juice, and soup cartons. And large blocks of polystyrene, styrofoam packaging. Cooking for large groups can result in large amounts of cooking oils. While most residents know that oils, fats, and grease can't go down the drains, indoor or outdoor, they're not sure what to do with them. Several drop-off recycling locations now accept cooking oil. Find your nearest collection spot at wastefreesandiego.org. Reuse and repair. Think twice before setting aside an unwanted or broken item in the donation pile. Making old t-shirts into new designs or reusable shopping bags or even a nostalgic quilt gives our once-loved t-shirts a new life. Turn old cards, magazines, and packaging into new gift wrap and decorations. Many appliances and clothing items can be repaired as well, from shoes to lawnmowers. Residents can visit repairsd.org to find a local repair business. Minimize disposable gift wrapping to reduce waste. And remember to always take a reusable shopping bag with you. Reusable bags can be used when shopping for gifts at retail stores. They aren't just for grocery stores. Another large component of the holiday waste is leftover food. Reduce food waste by cooking the right amounts, not overfilling plates, and keeping leftovers in easily visible locations in your refrigerator. Consider home composting. Composting options exist to suit apartment dwellers as well as those with outdoor space. Visit solanacenter.org to learn more about home composting. To find the closest drop-off location for cooking oil, styrofoam packaging, and other recyclables, or to get recycling questions answered, residents in the unincorporated county can visit the county's recycling and household hazardous waste database at wastefreesandiego.org or call 1-877-713-2784.
The holiday shopping season is here, and the county wants to remind consumers to double-check receipts and make sure that you're not getting overcharged by faulty cash register price scanners. Overcharging does happen. Every year, the County Department of Agriculture Weights and Measures inspects thousands of businesses to make sure that devices which scan or weigh products people are buying are charging consumers accurately. Last year, one out of every five stores inspected, 20%, had overcharges, and those overcharges averaged nearly $3 an error. May not sound like much, but just multiply that by lots of holiday purchases, and catching errors could add up to substantial savings. The county has some handy hints for shoppers. Always verify receipts and immediately notify store management of any price discrepancies. Take sales advertisements with you when shopping to verify prices. And know that stores cannot legally charge more than their lowest advertised, posted, or quoted price. Plan ahead and start watching for store sale flyers and sales. Make a list of what you need. Comparison shop with several different sources for best value. Buy what you need over several weeks or even months to take full advantage of future sales and bargains. And if you are overcharged, tell the store and ask them to refund the difference. If you can't resolve an overcharge with a store, you can report it to the county's Agriculture Weights and Measures Department by calling 1-888-TRUE-SCAN. That's 1-888-TRUE-SCAN.
The United States Food and Drug Administration warns that most women should not have hysterectomies or removal of fibroids using a morcellator device because it can spread cancer. A morcellator pulverizes fibroids to allow a surgeon to remove them through a small incision in the abdomen. But if any of the fibroids are cancerous, pulverizing them spreads cancer cells throughout the abdomen. At least 24 women have had conditions that were life-threatening due to the use of a morcellator, according to the FDA. It's impossible to know if uterine fibroids are cancerous until after a surgical procedure is done and a biopsy is completed. Johnson & Johnson, a major manufacturer of morcellators, pulled them off the market in April, and many major hospitals have stopped using them. The FDA is recommending two package warnings. Laparoscopic power morcellators should not be used for removal of uterine tissue containing suspected fibroids in patients who are peri- or postmenopausal or candidates for removing tissue intact through vaginal mini laparotomy incision. These groups of women represent the majority of women with fibroids who undergo hysterectomy or myomectomy. Laparoscopic power morcellators also should not be used in gynecologic surgery in which the tissue to be morcellated is known or suspected to be cancerous. One of 350 women undergoing a hysterectomy or myomectomy is found to have previously unsuspected uterine sarcoma cancer. There are other surgical treatment options available for women with symptomatic uterine fibroids. The FDA stopped short of banning the devices, which can help prevent scar tissue in younger women that would otherwise reduce their chances of becoming pregnant. It also reduces recovery time for surgery due to the smaller incision required for morcellation. Despite dangers from the device, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists praised the DFA's decision to stop short of a ban, stating, "We continue to believe that power morcellation has a role in gynecologic surgery." This has been Leon Thompson with the Health Report on East County Magazine.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Weather Report. Rainy and cool weather is on tap for Tuesday and Wednesday, bringing up to 3 inches of precipitation to our mountain areas. But don't expect snowfall in San Diego County with this storm, since snow is now forecast only for mountain peaks above 8,000 feet. Partly cloudy skies and possible showers are also forecast for Thursday, so keep your umbrellas on hand. This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Diana Lindsay. My guest has many accomplishments that she shares with the San Diego region. She's co-founder and president of Sunbelt Publications, a book wholesale and publishing company specializing in outdoor and regional interest. She's also author or co-author of 11 publications, including 8 nonfiction books, 2 maps, and 1 ebook. Welcome, Diana. It's a pleasure to have you here in the studio.
Thank you for inviting me.
Dan, in addition to the accomplishments already mentioned, you serve on the board of the San Diego Museum of Natural History and as museum outreach interpreter, leading free public walks throughout San Diego. How did you get started in this area of history and botany and publishing? And for you, how does it all fit together?
Actually, it was more serendipity is what I would call it. I've never really planned anything in life. I kind of live in the moment. And as opportunities happen, I kind of take a look at them and move forward if the opportunity looks right. And so where I am today is probably a result of just that. I was always interested in bicycling as a kid growing up. I went to UCLA, looked for a bike club, but biking wasn't in.
Really?
But there was a club called the Bruin Mountaineers that did hiking.
Uh-huh.
So I joined that, learned about the outdoors, had never even hiked in the outdoors until I joined the club. And then I had a history prof that was absolutely fantastic and kind of coached me to go into history. And so I brought my love of the outdoors with history and mm-hmm. ended up doing a master's thesis on the history of Anza-Borrego Desert State Park.
Wow.
And by pure chance, mm-hmm. one of the professors on my thesis committee was a friend of Richard Perrott of Copley Books. And Copley Books wanted to do a book on the Anza-Borrego Desert. And unbeknownst to me, in the mail came a contract for a book. And that was my first book, unsolicited by me,
because
I was doing a thesis on the Anza-Borrego State Park. And that eventually led to my working with my husband on writing a guidebook to Anza-Borrego State Park, mm-hmm. which then led to my eventually becoming a representative for both Copley Books and Wilderness Press, selling not only my book, but their books, and then an offer from Copley Books to become their sales manager. And so it just kind of unfolded, mm-hmm. never was planned. It just kind of doors opened and I walked into those doors. And then to get into my wholesale book business, it was kind of a funny situation. Helen Copley wanted to have her books into Walden Books, but at that point in time, Walden Books would not allow any vendors unless you had a Dun & Bradstreet number. And Helen Copley did not want to get a Dun & Bradstreet number because she would have to reveal all her assets. So as sales manager, I was told to go out and get a Dun & Bradstreet number so I could sell the Copley books to Walden Books. And I did, but then the IRS went after Helen Copley because she had been writing off some of her trips on the book division, and they gave her a choice of shutting down the book division or disclosing how the expenses really happened. So she shut the book division down. So there I was, no job, but I had a Dun & Bradstreet number, and I was a vendor with Walden Books. So I just began buying books and selling books to Walden's, eventually to Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Len Reggio purchased the B. Dalton stores and made them the Barnes & Noble stores. And he decided he did not want to have all the publishers dealing directly with Barnes & Noble. He'd heard I was selling books from various publishers, and I got a phone call at home from Len Reggio saying, "Are you a wholesaler?" And here I am in my garage, and I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "You're our wholesaler for the San Diego region." And suddenly, I was in a position that all these major publishers had to deal with me in my garage. And so then my husband said, "You need to decide, is this a hobby or is this a job? If this is a job, go get a warehouse." So that's basically where Sunbelt Publications started. And at that point then, I kind of expanded, and I kind of rode the tide with the big chain stores who were taking over and needed to have wholesalers that were their warehouses. But then as the chain stores became more dominant in the trade, they no longer needed the wholesalers because they were having their own distribution centers. So the rest of the story has to do with riding the tide, changing with the technology, changing with how the bookstores have dealt. And, you know, here I am still in business, but I've had to kind of change what I've been doing from a wholesaler now to focusing in more on distribution and publishing. And many of those major customers I had are now gone. There's no more Walden Books. There's no more Bookstar.
Right.
A lot of these other large chains that we dealt with, they're gone. So we've had to constantly change and kind of take a look and look for new opportunities. So the idea of looking for opportunities and being alert to changes in technology and all and riding with the flow, nothing's changed.
Being spontaneous and flexible has worked for you. It's an amazing
story. That has always worked.
Well, let's talk about two of your books. Marshall South and the Ghost Mountain Chronicles, and Ricardo Breceda, Accidental Artist.
Correct.
The first won Best Regional Book at the San Diego Book Awards and Best Book of the Year at the Outdoor Writers Association of California in 2005. Ricardo Breceda, Accidental Artist, won 7 awards in Best Regional Book, Cover Design, Biography, Art, and Travel from Forward Magazine, Independent Book Publishers Association, PubWest, Eric Hoffer Awards, to name a few. In your opinion, what is it about these two books that make them stand out?
Well, first of all, I think anyone who wants to write a book needs to check and see if there's a market for that book, if there's interest in the subject. In both cases, there was already the interest in Marshall South and his experiment in primitive living up on Ghost Mountain. There was a lot of curiosity. There were a lot of stories. People weren't really sure of what the whole story was, and everybody wanted to know. In the case of the sculptures, it was the same thing. There was these sculptures that Dennis Avery had commissioned to be placed around Borrego Valley. A lot of interest in it, people going out there to seeing them, and they wanted to know the story. So in the similarity of that, in fact, and I think in books, that if you want to select a topic to write about, is to first of all see where there is interest.
Right.
And if there is interest, then people already want to know the story. So then it's a matter of then researching the story, learning the story, and then writing the story, and then making sure you have, you know, a nice cover, a nice design, and that you're willing to go out and market the book. And I think that's the key to really having a successful book.
Now, you do nonfiction.
Personally, I do nonfiction.
Okay, so would you say this is the same for fiction?
In fiction, I think it's a little more creative process. You're kind of, you know, delving into maybe areas that have not been delved into before and trying to get into some totally new area. That's not an area that I personally deal with. I deal with things that are probably, as you said, in the nonfiction arena. So I look for topics that are already there and need the story to be told.
Well, it sounds like you've told many stories in your time. One last question. After a quarter century of success in the book trade and so much community involvement, what's next? I mean, what are your goals for Sunbelt Publications, and what about yourself as an author?
First of all, for Sunbelt Publications, it certainly has evolved with the times. For instance, we're no longer a huge wholesaler. You know, we're now a much smaller publisher and a distributor, and we're focused on quality books rather than a lot of books. So we're focusing in on topics that are a little more unusual, that have a market, that people want to have and hold, and so we're kind of really focused on that kind of thing. We also believe strongly in the environment and in our region, and we like to see the history and the culture and the natural history of the area preserved. So we look for books that are in that area that have value and that will tell a story and that are educational, because we strongly believe that in order to really protect something, you need to love it, and to love it, you need to know about it, and you need to be educated about it. So we're about telling the story. We want to tell the story of this region. We want to tell a story that makes people love the area. Personally, I would like to spend more time writing some more books and getting into more topics. I've got a backlist of a whole bunch of topics I would really like to work on. And then we're always looking for exceptional authors. And again, for those that are out there, you know, the question might be, what are we looking for? Well, we're looking not only for somebody who has written a really good book that is about our region that would fit into the books that we're looking for. But more important than that, writing a book is only half the project. The other project is being a salesman.
Right.
You have to be able to market your book. You have to be able to go out there, talk to the public, be interviewed, not be afraid of doing that kind of thing. You can have the best book in the world, but if you don't have the ability to sell the book, it's not what we're looking for, because we know, having learned the hard way, that you really, really have to be able to sell your book, because books don't sell themselves. There's too much out there.
Right.
There's too much competition. Self-publishing, which used to have a really black mark because it was considered a vanity press, has really kind of changed over the years, and there are more and more self-published books, and people that are doing that are out there really pushing those books. So if you're self-published, if you're going with a publisher, no matter, the one key is, how well can you sell sell that book.
Right. So the one thing in common is that the author will have to do a lot of work.
The author has to do a lot of work. There's not, I think, a publisher around, unless it's a very exceptional book, that is going to pick up a book if the author is shy and not willing to do any work to push that book.
Okay. Well, you've given some good words of advice for our authors out there. Our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
For more information on my guest, Sunbelt Publications, and their authors, visit the company website at www.sunbeltbooks.com. And again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf.
Concerned about senior citizens who are alone over the holidays in convalescent homes, an East County businesswoman has started an Adopt a Grandparent program. Sally K. Brown, a Mary Kay Cosmetics Senior Director and Alpine Mountain Empire Chamber of Commerce member, has been helping to provide for lonely and less fortunate seniors in our region for the last 4 years. You can help by donating $25 that'll be used to create a Christmas stocking filled with hand lotions, foot creams, socks, a teddy bear, and candy. Brown says, I am doubling my efforts this year to include 2 convalescent homes instead of 1, so my goal is 250 gifts. Please consider participating this year to bring some cheer to older folks whose own families have forgotten them or are simply too busy to visit. It is quite typical for no family members to attend these convalescent home Christmas parties. Besides donations, you can also personally participate and sing some Christmas carols to brighten up the holidays for local seniors. To participate, contact Sally K. Brown at 619-669-6554. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
UT San Diego has published a list of 9 danger zones for explosives still lurking beneath the ground at former military sites. It may surprise you to learn that 7 of those are in East County. The highest risk site is Camp Lockett in Campo, a former army base that is currently used by equestrian groups. 5 others are in the Borrego Springs Desert and the Anza Borrego Desert. The specific locations are at the Benson Ocotillo Dry Lake, at Camp Ensign, at the Borrego Hotel, at Borrego Navy Military Wash, and at Clark Dry Lake. Another is in Ramona, at the Ramona Bombing Target Area near Highway 67 and Highland Valley Road. Others include the Brownfield Bombing Range in Otay and Camp Elliott near Sycamore Canyon in the Scripps Ranch area. You can find out more information at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.